This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of the Ticket City Podcast. I'm Jeff Ketchum, owner, publisher of OrangeBloods.com, joined today, as is usually the case, the entire Orange Bloods group, Alex, Anwar, Dustin, Jason, we are all here. I've got a roadmap of things that I want us to get into involving multiple sports. Typically, we lead off with football, but gentlemen, we have to talk about this Texas basketball thing. And because I did a podcast yesterday where I started to kind of just talk it through. And then 30 minutes later, I was so exasperated by what the hell's happening and what it might mean. And I compared it to Mac in 2013, or were we watching a situation where ultimately a guy looks like he's having a late season saving of his job, and then it comes down to Oklahoma State, or like it did against Baylor a few years ago. So I wondered if 2020 Shaka Smart is really 2013 Mac Brown 2.0, but my God, there's a 5-game winning streak. They're beating good teams. They're beating good teams on the road. They're closing out games. It is, I'm at a loss for words from where I was when they lost to Iowa State, and it seemed like every good player on the team had an injury. And somehow we're in this position where this team has something to play for going. They could be the number three team, the number three seed in the Big 12 tournament with a win Saturday at home, senior day, Oklahoma State. What the hell? Anybody that wants to jump in, what the hell is happening?
It's a good question. I spent a lot of time thinking about it after the Oklahoma game and wrote about it in my column. I think there's it's really hard to put your finger on one thing, because each time, like you said, when you start to examine who's healthy, the previous results, all these sorts of things, you're like, this shouldn't be happening. They shouldn't be. Maybe a few wins, okay, but 5 straight wins in the row. At one point, it was 4 straight by double digits. You're talking about beating West Virginia at home, going on the road to Texas Tech and beating them, beating an Oklahoma team that's playing for its NCAA tournament lives, going on the road to Kansas State and handling them relatively easily, pounding TC at home. Like, it doesn't really make any sense. I think a few things have happened. I think sometimes you see in college sports, and specifically basketball, just because of the nature of the sport, 5 guys on the floor, whatever, there's just times where certain things can just cause guys to just rally around a cause. And in a weird way, you know, I see a lot of people on Orange Bloods like, oh, you know, Shaka Smart finally figured out who his best players are. Well, it's not like Jericho Sims was playing poorly. It's not like Jace Febris was playing poorly the entire season. I mean, Jericho Sims was having an all-conference season. So, and it's not like if you would have suddenly played these 5 guys the third or fourth game of the year, they would have magically played like this. So I don't buy the idea. Should Brock Cunningham have been playing more? Absolutely. But the whole general idea that they just weren't playing the right guys, I don't think that's fair. I think sometimes you see that, you know, when guys have their backs against the wall, there's a sense of urgency, there's a sense of desperation, and they've just rallied around, hey, we have who we have. You've got 8 guys or 9, depending on the day, depending on Donovan Williams, that know they're going to play. They don't have to look over their shoulder. You know, Shaka Smart's usually been more of a player's coach, a longer leash kind of guy. Like, he'll let you play through mistakes. I mean, just go look at all the missed 3-pointers earlier this year. But now you've got a group of guys that know their role. They're not looking over their shoulder. They're not afraid to make mistakes because they know they have to play, that they know that they're dependent upon to be on the floor and play. And, you know, and I asked Shaka this at one point, and he kind of brushes this off and really deflects to the players. But ever since that Iowa State game, he's been a little different. And I can't quite put my finger on, like, what it is specifically. But he's always been a very highly energetic guy, always, especially on the sidelines during games. He's always upbeat. He's always positive. He's always trying to pump energy into his guys. But ever since that Iowa State game, it's like his demeanor is just more intense. It's more demanding. I think that in – I don't think he'd ever say this, but I think when he looks out on the floor now and he sees guys like Brock Cunningham, Royce Hamm, even a guy like Courtney Ramey, although he was a really high recruit, Kai Jones, he's got a lot of guys that are kind of similar to his players at VCU from a mindset standpoint, in that they've kind of got that – underdog-ish, chip on the shoulder, you know, junkyard dog type mentality where it's just effort, effort, effort. You got some blue collar guys, you know, they like call him Royce Hamm blue collar. Obviously Brock is just flying all around with loose balls and things like that. And I think he's been able to challenge this group in a different way because of the type of personnel that he now has. And I think too, for him, you know, it's, I go back to, I forget what game it was. It might have been after West Virginia, where I asked him something about, you know, just the conversation around the program. And it was the first time he's ever publicly acknowledged that he was aware of the conversation about why, you know, the team's struggling and his job status and all those things. And he is one of the few guys that says he doesn't read the internet, and I genuinely believe him. But even he said, like, my friends text me stories or things. And I think he was specifically referring to, you know, when the Beeline news came out. And he said, you know what, I've been on both sides of this. I've been the guy rumored to be the guy that's going to take somebody else's job. And now I've been the guy that is on the hot seat. And I just, after that Iowa State game, I just, something changed with him. And I don't quite know what it is, but there's more intensity. There's more demanding. It's one of my big gripes with them earlier in the season was, I think they gave too much freedom to the players. I think they allowed those guys to really dictate everything because they wanted to be this player-led team. And now I think you're seeing a combination of Shaka of really being more demanding, more intense. And then you've got guys like Ramey and Andrew Jones and Matt Coleman that are kind of grabbing the leadership type thing as well. Courtney Ramey in particular is a guy that Shaka has mentioned a lot recently because Matt Coleman has not been 100%, probably not close. Through the last four games that he's played, it's just a lot of kind of, I don't know if strange is the right word, but a lot of strange things just kind of coming together. And you've got a group that understood that, hey, if we don't start winning now, like, our season's toast. I don't know how much the players are aware of the hot seat conversation, but I'm sure they are. They're on Instagram and Twitter and those things a lot. Perhaps just a lot of desperation kicked in. And two, they're making shots. This is so much of Big 12 basketball is you got to make shots. And Courtney Ramey and Andrew Jones especially, and then Matt Coleman most recently against Oklahoma, those guys are making shots. And when your guards are making shots and they're making plays and they're playing well off of each other, you can win a lot of games in the Big 12, and that's what's happening right now. This was always going to be a team that was about its guards and whether its guards can win the battle against the other team's guards. And right now for five straight games, those guards are winning the battle.
And Dustin, like, hasn't, like, Shaka received, like, more technicals over the past couple of games? And he has, like,
he had two. Yeah, he had one at Texas Tech in the game prior to that, I think was the West Virginia home game. And, you know, Brian Davis and I in the post game after West Virginia, we were trying to think of the last time Shaka had a technical. And I think it went all the way back to, like, 2 years ago, I think, at Texas Tech. I bet he doesn't have more than five in his whole Texas tenure. And he had two of them. I mean, in back-to-back games. It kind of goes back to, like, when I watch him on the sidelines, is there's just something a little bit different. It's almost way more intense because he's always been highly energetic, but it just there's kind of like more of a fire from him in terms of just really challenging his guys and the aggressiveness and all those sorts of things. But yeah, I mean, he it was like, I couldn't even remember the last time he got in a technical, and then suddenly he got two in back-to-back games.
Okay, Dustin, that was a lot of insight. That was a lot of words. That was a lot of layers. But I don't know that you answered the question that I asked, which was, what the hell is this? And so, Anwar, I've been wanting to hear from you on this because when I ask the question, I suppose it could be interpreted rhetorically, but this was a coach that 3 weeks ago, it felt like, okay, you know, there were people who were demanding that he be fired midseason. And then there were people who were like, well, just let – let him go out with some respect and finish this season, but he's played his way into the point where there can be no return. Five games later, as I mentioned, they've got a chance to not only make if they win on Saturday, I don't even know if they're on the bubble anymore. I mean, they may just be in.
I don't think they are. You'd be third in the Big 12, two games above 500 in the league with 20 overall wins. I think it would put them in.
So, like, they might not even be in a play. In our minds, the way we've envisioned this season going, it was like, oh, my God, if they get in, it would be by the skin of their teeth. This could eventually end up where it doesn't change anything about the greater context of Shaka's five-year run at Texas. It hasn't been good enough, and that's without knowing what they would even do as a team that would make it, let's say, as a 10 seed if they go out and finish as a number three Big 12 team in the conference. But if you just isolate this year, look at it through a vacuum with the injuries that he's dealt with and the way that this team has finished, like you'd be hard-pressed. If you're Chris Del Conte, suddenly you're in a position where if you don't know who the next coach is going to be, because as Dustin has pointed out throughout the last couple of weeks, the job basketball coaching market is a really tricky one. And who the hell are you actually going to get if you don't want to pay the buyout for Chris Beard and money is an object at all? It gets to be real tricky. Suddenly Shaka Smart's had a decent year. It's not great, but this team making the tournament, given some of the circumstances, this team finishing strongly, this team making the tournament, it is the lowest possible bar of success that would have been achieved. I mean, you're not climbing several rungs up the ladder, but it will have been a climb up the ladder. Chris Del Conte at that point could say, we don't want to pay the buyout. He's warranted another season, and it's potentially justified?
Well, yeah, Ketch. I mean, because it at the end of the day, Chris Del Conte wants to make money. He doesn't want to lose money. Like, that's not what he's here for. So, you know, we're talking about a sport that's a bonus at Texas. You know, let's just be honest. You know, football is the franchise, and everything else is a bonus. And if you win, fantastic. But, you know, this is not Georgetown or something like that. It's not Duke or North Carolina.
Like the Julian Edelman
yes.
of the New England Patriots.
Correct. So if you're CDC and you've got a guy who, you know, who's now is giving you enough reasons to justify, because now CDC can point to injuries, right? And you can say, man, look how injured we were and look how banged up we were and look how this team finished. And that's not enough reasons for me to depart with $10 million and then bring in another coach and have to pay him. So whatever that ends up being, I mean, he's giving him – Shaka is making Chris Del Conte's life easier, because Chris Del Conte, as we know, don't like to fire nobody. I mean, Chris Del Conte is like – working for Chris Del Conte is like working for the government. It's hard to get fired. You got to do a whole lot to get fired from him. So I think a couple of things. I think Shaka, as Dustin points out, had to know. Clearly, the players had to know. Iowa State happened. And, you know, it's like Shaka will get credit for it. It reminds me a little bit almost of back when Charlie was here and there was Chris Warren and Deontay Foreman. And remember, that was just that back and forth thing. And then all of a sudden, Chris Warren gets injured. And then they're like, I guess we have to let Deontay be the guy. He just ends up rushing for like 2,000 yards in a season. You're like, why was that even a battle going beforehand? It's kind of like this, where he kind of he's kind of stumbled into a rotation where it kind of works for them, a bench thing, but it kind of works for them. I mean, Royce Ham Jr. is playing extremely well. I was trying to think of the guys that like Dustin didn't point out, because he pointed out so many guys. But, you know, Royce Ham, the way he's been playing has just been, just ballsy. You know, and Dustin talked a little bit about Brock Cunningham. Dustin, I can't remember if you tweeted out a story, I think, that you had written.
Yeah, about a scouting Brock. Report when he committed. It's my Mona Lisa now.
Yes, and like you got a guy like that who's gritty. Like you got the guys at ESPN talking about how you need guys like this on your team, and they have just kind of stumbled into a success. I mean, if Matt Coleman doesn't hit that miracle shot. I don't even know what the conversation is that we're having right now. We're probably still back on the hot seat. He banks in the biggest shot of Shaka's career, essentially. And you know, obviously VCU, but I'm just maybe his career at Texas. And here we are talking about a guy that if you're CDC, you got to be saying, man, I don't know if there's enough things on the table for me to part with $10 million.
Well, I think that if they don't win against Oklahoma, then we go into Saturday much more. The conversation is Texas on the bubble, right? Like at that point, it's they got to beat Oklahoma State, and then maybe even they have to win a game in the Big 12 tournament to kind of make sure that they're definitely in that. And goddamn, it was really poetic. I mean, when you think about what Matt Coleman was supposed to be as, you know, as an incoming recruit, this was the guy that was supposed, there were the comparisons of like, can he do for the program what TJ Ford or a guy like DJ Augustine did, which is as he develops over a 2-3 year career. I don't even know that there was a complete given that it would be four, but he was always like a 3 or 4 year guy. But the thought was, I remember like making Hollis Price comparisons that, this is a guy that over a 4 year career can lead Texas somewhere like that. That's what his, he was supposed to be a bit of the guy that takes Shaka Smart's program somewhere. And there's a lot invested into Matt Coleman that, you know, and quite frankly, at times it's looked like he's underachieved. And then there have been times when it looks like he may be really underrated, that he, there's this really good player that exists now, and that maybe some new coach next year really gets to take advantage of. But he's turned out to be like a really tough, really he's starting really to become the guy that Shaka Smart recruited him to be, and for, and the place in the program that he's supposed to have. For him to hit that shot, I mean, that shot is the shot that Shaka Smart recruited him to make, and it's taking 3 seasons to get there. But that he, of all the guys, I mean, I might say this, if it were Andrew, it'd be a lot of, he'd be another guy that you'd go, amazing that of all the guys that hit the shot, it was him because of everything that he's overcome. But Matt Coleman was brought to Texas to be the guy that did those types of things for Shaka Smart, so that he hits that shot, Jason, it reminded me a little bit of the Kenton Paulino shot. I think about like buzzer beater type, I don't know how much of this season I'll remember. Most of the good, I won't remember very much at all. Like, this has been kind of a painful season. But the Coleman game winner in Norman, I think I'll remember that one for a while.
Well, certainly the most exciting play of the year, and it's one of the few I've watched over the last month. I turned that game on at halftime this week, and of course, they're leading at halftime, then they trail behind, go behind, and I'm like, oh, man, am I just a jinx? Should I turn this off? But I watched it through the end, and, you know, it's just, it's fascinating to me, all this discussion, you know, Shaka's job security potentially, and obviously the NCAA berth comes down to Oklahoma missing 2 free throws. Actually, I think they missed 3 out of 4, didn't they, in the waning seconds?
They did, yeah. Brady Manick, who is 78% of the line, missed 1 of 2, and then Doolittle, poor dude, last game in Oklahoma as a senior. He's their main guy, 80% at the line. He missed both.
Dad's in the stands, right? No, yeah, misses both. And then you come down and Coleman hits almost like a running double clutch 3 off the glass. You're like, oh, my gosh, man, just the fate of these college coaches whose jobs are kind of hanging in the balance. It's amazing what that can sometimes come down to. So, you know, I said Shaka needs to go to Vegas and play the lottery, or play blackjack, or play the lottery in Texas or something, because the stars were shining on him that night. But yeah, man, like, you know, I wrote about it a month and a half ago in my 3-2-1 column. I mean, I used to be a diehard basketball fan, and I mean, I would watch every game religiously. I probably watched basketball as closely as I did football, but I don't know. Maybe it's just the mediocrity, but my it seems like every year my interest goes down and down and down. And it's different for us, Ketch. I mean, we can kind of watch basketball a little bit more so, certainly, than football, in more of a fan regard, if we're just being honest. I mean, we know Dustin's going to be covering the game like he does, so we can actually just kind of enjoy the games. And it's just kind of sucked my interest out. And I said, I think it was when they lost to West Virginia, I said, I may not watch another minute of this season. And call me a bandwagon person if you want. But, yeah, I'm starting to climb back on. And I did watch that. And, I mean, listen, we were all on Slack. And as soon as that ball went through the hoop, I was like, I sent a DM to everybody. Holy effing shit. I can't believe that just happened. So, yeah, it's exciting, man. I'm getting kind of drawn back into it. And, you know, listen, man, and Shaka's got his critics and everything else. I get it, but I don't mind admitting I'm pulling for the guy. Not necessarily because I think he's a great coach or anything like that, but I've always said he just strikes me as – if my kid was a basketball player, Shaka Smart is the type of coach I would want mentoring my son for 4 years. So good for Shaka. Good for these guys who really kind of picked themselves up by the bootstraps, some of these guys coming off the bench. So it's exciting. And then, like I said, I think they win this week or win on Saturday. I think they're in. You know, Shaka has to be safe at that point.
I guess what the hell is this? Is the Shaka Smart like redemption tour to a certain extent? It's amazing. It is amazing. I keep thinking back to that 2013 season and Mac having to fire a coordinator. He brings in Greg Robinson. They go on a run. They win a bunch of games. It comes down to, you know, it came down to, is Texas going to win the Big 12 championship in Waco? And also at the same time, like, is Mac Brown going to save his job? And there was this thought, Dustin, I'm about to come to you with this one. Before we move on from basketball, I'm going to come to you on, I want to just pose this question to you. The thought process was that that day that they played in Waco, the thought process was if they win this game, like, you can't get rid of him. Like, as bad as recruiting, it had tailspinned at that point. And as much as it had become toxic in the program and it was time for a change, the thought process was Mac's actually done one hell of a little job of coaching back half of the season. They're hot at the end of the season. They've got a chance to – he had it, that Baylor game was his chance. Win that game, they can't run you off. Has Shaka Smart, was that just it in Norman, or is that Saturday? Like, I'm wondering if we've reached the point where Shaka is now safe, that the end of this season is going to buy him some cover, that maybe he doesn't lose his job, or is that game still to come? Where do you think we are on the Shaka will have officially done enough if this happens point?
I think when Matt Coleman made that shot, I think it went from likely to be gone to likely to being back. I think that's as it relates to his job security and his status, I think that's how big that win was. And I think it's also, too, you're kind of under the assumption that, hey, you get a home game against Oklahoma State to kind of just, you know, punch your ticket into the NCAA tournament. But that was such a big shot that, you know, even if Texas lost Saturday at Oklahoma State, versus Oklahoma State at home in Austin, and they went to the Big 12 tournament and won a game, probably still had a pretty good chance of getting into the tournament. But I think that's how big that shot at Oklahoma was, is it literally, I think, swung it from likely to be gone to likely to be coming back. And we know, as Anwar was pointing out, Chris Del Conte does not want to write that check. He just doesn't, especially for the basketball program. And if you start looking at reasons why he could convince himself to bring Shaka Smart back, beyond the winning, you start to look at the roster. Everybody's coming back. You start to look at Greg Brown. Memphis is dealing with all sorts of bullshit and NCAA issues right now, and they've thought to be the biggest competition for Texas in that recruitment. And we know how much Greg Brown and his dad were paying close attention to how teams are playing and how they're finishing the season. Obviously Texas is checking that box suddenly right now. So you start to, if you're looking at this from Del Conte's point of view and understanding that I do not want to pay that buyout, can I find reasons why I can make a case to bring him back? And once that ball went through off the glass in Oklahoma with Matt Coleman, which Shaka's guy recruited him since he was in eighth grade, when he was recruiting him, literally handed him the keys, handed him a set of keys on his visit, said, hey, these are the keys to the program. When he made that shot, I think it swung it from likely to be gone to likely to be coming back. I think that's how big that was.
It was poetic when that shot went in. absolutely poetic.
And Dustin, isn't there a chance that when's the arena supposed to be done? It's not next year. It's maybe like the following year.
Yes. After that? Yes. I think it's 2022. So yeah. And that's, if we look way down the road, as much as, you know, it might drive Texas fans nuts, I feel like they're kicking the can down the road as it relates to basketball. And I get it. Look, you know, Chris Del Conte had a chance last year and he punted because of the buyout. That's strictly why, you know, Shaka Smart came back. He was not going to write that check. You look at the arena upcoming, you could say, okay, you know what? He gets into the NCAA tournament. I think there's literally next to 0% chance Shaka Smart would make the NCAA tournament and then get fired. I just cannot see that happening. So he makes the tournament. Bunch of guys coming back. Let's say they add Greg Brown. You're kind of like, okay, you know, if it doesn't happen this year, we've got this new arena coming up. We can sell the idea to some big name coach. Hey, come open the arena, or get here. I think a year early before the arena, whatever it is. Maybe it's a different hiring climate with the candidates and those sorts of things. But yeah, that arena is still. I think it's supposed to be the 2022 season. So not next season. But perhaps the season after that, it would open, I think, I'd have to go back and look, but I think it would open like at some point during that year.
Yeah, so that's what I was thinking, Dustin. It would also, for Del Conte, make sense, like to what you're saying is, hey, you know, let Shaka finish out this old arena. Then if you got to make a move, then and you want to generate excitement and buzz, here's a new coach is leading us in this blah, blah, blah. But, you know, this is just all the excuses that Chris Del Conte could put on the table to say, let's just stay put.
Yeah, but I think if they would have lost at Oklahoma, I think that the chances were very real that they'd make a coaching change. I think that's how big that game was to win. Because if you win that game on the road and what it does to your Big 12 standing, it totally changed, you know, how their season could look. I mean, you just look at the Big 12 standings. I mean, Oklahoma could go from, like, potentially finishing third to, I think, like, seventh. Or something like that, you know, and finishing third looks way different than it does seventh, even though you might only be separated by two games or even a game or something like that. So that's, yeah, if they didn't win at Oklahoma, I probably would have, you know, started putting my head into some coaching hot board stuff because I think it probably would have been difficult for them to make the tournament at that point.
I mean, this is impacting the way you may enjoy the birth of your first child. That's how big this shot was.
When that shot went in, I was watching it on my computer in the Dishwalk press box. I literally, the first thing I thought, I was like, oh my gosh, I might not be covering a coaching search when my son's born. Like, that's the first thing that went in my head, which I don't know if that's sad or what, but it's
real.
Like,
is what that
I
is.
I went from thinking that to like, oh my gosh, I might have to travel for the NCAA tournament. Like, which I thought, you know, a couple weeks ago, like I was wondering if they'd make the NIT after the Iowa State game, and here they are. And I was looking at bracket matrix before we came on, and that's got them as a 12 seed right now. And you're starting to see a lot of places that have Texas in and not on the outside looking in.
Wait. When's the birth of your baby? When's the due date?
Due date is April 13th.
Yeah, okay. That'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, we've had that talk before.
That'll be interesting.
He's dreaded this idea of all the times there's ever been a coaching search that it would happen right when, you know, he's about to be a daddy.
Does a bitching start if they make the tournament and go one and done? You know, then are people right back on Shaka's case?
Oh, I mean, well, it's, you know, you read the board right now, is just looking at a thread that there are people on the board that are like, I don't want people to show up to the game Saturday because I want Shaka gone. Like, there's still very much and I don't know if it's just the vocal people on the internet and not the average fan, but there's still a lot of people that are very much Texas fan wise that are very much on the side of like, this guy's got to go, you know, we got to look at the long term and the past and not right now. If they go one and done, that'll be all the questions again. But at that point, you're in the NCAA tournament. I just don't think Chris Del Conte is going to
suddenly
look at a one and done and be like, oh, no, never mind. Change my mind.
No, I just meant from a fan perspective.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If they go one and done, the fans are going to be like, oh, here we go again, you know, type of deal. And you know, to their credit, that's what they're used to at Texas under Shaka Smart.
The wild card in this, and no offense to your pending new baby, Dustin, but when that ball first went through the net, my first thought wasn't about, you know, I just you know, I did think of you. But my first thought, Greg Brown. That ball goes through the net, and I'm like, did Shaka just save his job? Did Greg Brown just become a Longhorn? Like, is that the thing that was needed? If I could, if there was like Vegas odds on this, I would have to think they changed if they weren't already leaning to, I don't know. Like it's because we don't know exactly what the 4-game winning streak was before it was 5 and like what it would all mean. That's a big deal. Like if you don't ever want to just not do something because of a guy, right? There's a recruit shouldn't make that big of a difference if a program's truly suffering. However, there are going to be a lot of returning guys coming back. If the thought even right now was, man, if you could just pluck Greg Brown out of high school and add him to this mix that's playing right now, that'd be fun. That'd be a fun. But based on what we've seen in the last 5 games, add that dude to that, I would watch that. I would make a point to tune in and watch that. It doesn't guarantee that Texas would even do as well as they've done this season in the Big 12. Maybe next season is the year when it would fall apart. But I think there would be an actual marquee attraction there. And if Shaka Smart is going to be at Texas next year, then for all of the reasons and a few others that Jason mentioned, that like if I had a son, he's the kind of guy that I would like for him to go play for. Shaka Smart coming back definitely for Texas, I think makes Texas the odds-on favorite for Greg Brown. And like there's a lot of things suddenly that come together for Shaka Smart in a way where it looks like maybe he's got momentum in a way that we could not have previously envisioned being possible in 2.5 weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, and even back when, you know, there's a lot of kind of Memphis chatter, I had heard from a couple of people that, you know, there's some people that thought, hey, Texas is still kind of hanging in this thing as even a slight leader at that point, but they've got to play well to end the season. And then Iowa State happened, and once that happened, I was in my head, I was like, oh, man, that's not going to help their chances. But, yeah, I mean, you look at Memphis right now, I mean – they just got hit with something from the NCAA about, you know, the NCAA independent accountability resolution process about James Wiseman. Like the NCAA wants to come after Penny Hardaway. So they're dealing with that stuff now. And that's, I think, Texas' main competitor for Greg Brown. And, you know, Auburn just lost at home to Texas A&M. And I really thought Greg Brown was going to go to Auburn. I just don't think he's a guy that wants to play on a Kentucky one and done a bunch of 5-stars kind of team. I mean, it's all adding up to play in the Texas' favor, especially with the way they're playing down the stretch. Yeah, and if you add that guy to all these returning pieces, suddenly next year, if they make the NCAA tournament this year, suddenly it kind of has a little bit of an excitement that this program hasn't had in a long time. When you start to look at the roster and you add a guy like that. So, yeah, I mean, I think we'd be naive to say that wouldn't possibly factor into the decision about his stats. Like, you're never going to keep it or not keep a coach based on one single basketball player. You're not going to do it. But when you're trying to figure out the pros and cons and why or why not, that kind of local product, I mean, he, I think, is the best prospect that's ever played basketball in Central Texas. That's a big deal, you know, for the University of Texas to have an opportunity to sign that kind of player. So, yeah, I think now you'd have to look at that recruitment and say, you know what, maybe 2-3 weeks ago the signs weren't all pointing to Texas. But certainly when you start to connect some dots and look at how this thing's playing out, it's certainly playing in the Texas favor right now.
But, Dustin, like you know, on the outside looking, and you've talked to him, right? So, and I've seen his games, right? I've gone to multiple of his games because I don't live that far from him. So I've seen him play. But I've always believed when it came to Greg Brown that he's always was looking for Texas to give him an excuse to come here. Because at the end of the day, like, you know what North Carolina is, right? I mean, there's no ambiguity as to is what North Carolina represents or what North Carolina is about. You know what Kentucky is. I mean, again, like those are programs that I feel like if he wanted to go there, he could have committed to those guys a long time ago, right? I mean, Dean Smith was at his, you know, his game. What was the last Dean Smith? don't know what I'm saying. Anyway, but, you know, he was at a game like last year and this and that. So I guess at the end of the day, like, hasn't always been like, hey, I just want Texas to give me a reason to come here, because he literally could, outside of maybe Auburn, every other school was kind of, you kind of know what you were getting into.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think that, you know, going back to the early signing period in November, there was a brief period of time where, you know, some people were wondering if maybe he would just decide. But the people, you know, that Greg and his dad talked to, they, you know, Greg kind of, you know, just for lack of a better term, he kind of calls it their inner circle. He's like, yeah, I got guys that are watching all these programs and doing their homework, and we talk about it, all these things. I think they were like, looking for, you know, I guess Texas just to kind of prove it, you know, like, as you were saying, like, give me a reason why I shouldn't leave the state to go play at one of these big name programs or somewhere else. And, you know, he's been on the Texas campus a ton. He knows all these players. You know, he goes in the summer and plays pickup games, and he talks to all the current players and things like that. It's just, it always came down to, because whenever they waited and they didn't sign, it was always going to come down to, is Texas going to do enough on the hardwood to get him? That's really what it was going to come down to. Or was he going to go somewhere else where there is just, you know, a Memphis where they're kind of having a great season and Penny Hardaway and all that sort of thing, or a Kentucky or an Auburn or somewhere like that. So, yeah, I think with how much he's been on campus and the things they talk about valuing, it was really going to get down to, we're going to watch these teams closely, and we're going to see how they're playing, and we're going to see how they're responding to their coaching, and then we're going to make a decision, which it was, I guess, was kind of like, well, you know, Texas was thought to be the leader early on. They just got to go out and prove it on the hardwood, and if they do, they're probably going to be the leader to get them.
Okay, we'll transition away from basketball, and we'll let Alex Dunlap come back into the conversation for the first time today. So don't worry, Alex, I've been thinking of you. There actually is a football question that I wanted to ask everybody. So this is going to be like two halves of a podcast. We'll have the Shaka Smart, and then for like the next 15, 20 minutes, I had a question that I wanted to pose to all of you. I thought about the advantages of giving you guys a heads up to the question, and then I decided, no, I'll let it be organic. I'll let us kind of let this, we'll just see where it goes. But the question of the day on the football side of thing that I've been somewhat kicking around, who do we think is the best coordinator on campus? Ultimately, the best hire, the guy that will be the most successful, the best coordinator is either the offensive guy or the defensive guy. Is it Yurcich? Is it Ash? As a question, it feels, from my perspective, they're both really talented guys that have resumes that suggests that they were really good hires. And I think both come into the season with really big expectations. I think it's pretty close. Like, I think you could make a case for either guy. So that's the question I wanted us to kick around for about 15, 20 minutes now, is this question of who is the best coordinator on this, in this program right now. And Alex, because you know, the basketball talk just didn't jump your way, I want to start with you on this question. Who do you think is Texas's best coordinator coming out of this offseason change that we've seen?
Well, I think we'll find out. I mean, it's like right now it's kind of, it feels like, you know, you can look at what both guys have done and look at their resumes. One has actually been to the, you know, he's gotten to the head coaching role, you know, before, failed as a head coach, but at least he'd gotten there. He got a guy in Yurcich who's called plays, but at his biggest stop and his biggest feather in his cap, maybe was a guy that was not as, you know, what I mean, you know, wasn't as involved in play calling, right, at Ohio State. So I think that Ash is more seasoned. I think, though, that what this team needs is somebody that can allow Tom Herman to – somebody needs to be Tom Herman's major Applewhite. Apparently, that's sort of a big deal. Apparently, that's the reason why he's been a mediocre coach at Texas while he was an excellent coach at the University of Houston. That, I mean, that's the only, you know, he basically brought his same staff from the University of Houston down here to Texas outside of that guy. Todd Orlando was there, you know, a lot of the defensive staff was there, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that the more seasoned coach is probably Ash. I think the more important coordinator is going to be Yursich because of the fact that it just feels like Tom Herman has shown he's shown and he's admitted that he's not really capable of being the head coach that he wants to be whenever he has to be the offensive coordinator. And to be quite frank, he hasn't been a very good offensive coordinator for the University of Texas. So I guess my answer would be Yursich for those reasons. With that being said, clearly this is just a projection. It's hard to know until we see these guys on the football field, and we haven't seen as much as one spring practice yet.
Anybody want to jump in?
I think it's Ash hands down. I don't even think this is a competition.
Really?
I don't think it's even close. I think if you just look at what Ash has done since he's already taken over, right? He's already been a guy that clearly has studied enough film and looked at and assessed the rosters and say, you know what, Taquan Graham, you need to go inside. That's what we need to do.
Overshown to linebackers.
Overshown to linebackers.
That's true. Those are good moves.
You know, he's
moved, these are good points.
He's moved Reese Letal to defensive line. He's got Malcolm Epps that he's going to give as a pass in rusher and some reps. Like, I look at a guy right now who has said, okay, like, balls to the walls. Like, this is what I need to be done. And I'm not saying Yursich isn't, you know, not going to be a good coordinator. That's not the question. But you're asking who's the better of the two. When I look at the changes that he's already made, that shows me a guy who's studied a lot of film, who's been studying this team, by the way, since he came in for that Oklahoma game, but who's studied a lot of film, who's got a head start, and has already hit the ground running. So for me, it's Ash.
I think that may be correct, Anwar, but one of the interesting elements of this season is that I think Yursich has a lot more to work with on the offensive side of the ball. And I think about the way we've looked at these Texas coordinators since Tom Herman's arrived and the way Todd Orlando from the beginning of his tenure towards the end of it, how he literally did a 180. He was the guy that seemingly everybody was talking about how long are you going to keep him before he was thought to be the important guy and much more so than Major Applewhite. And then obviously just over the course of three seasons, he goes from being that guy to run him out of town as quickly as possible. And essentially that's what happened. I mean, they finished that last game of the regular season and then like there were changes. But Ash is the guy that gets to take over a top national 25 type offense with a senior quarterback Yursich. Yursich will enter this season poised, you would think, to have the most amount of success. Where as we look at the defensive side of the ball, and it's like, man, they just moved Reese Letal over to the defensive side. Malcolm, they need a lot of help. They need potentially incoming transfer linebackers, if at all possible. They need more guys along the defensive line to stand up. What do we make of a secondary? You know, like there's question marks all over the field and there are talent concerns in that front six or front seven. It may very well be that Ash is the best coordinator that Texas has. But I wonder if in 9 months, Yursich is the coordinator that has the most hype and the most public juice, if you will.
But I'm just basing it off of where we are right now in March. And you're asking a question in March, not the hypotheticals of what could be. So if we're just talking about what we've seen right now, it's Ash. Like, but now the hypotheticals of what the season could look like, you could go either way with that.
Ketch, I'm in total agreement. I think and with Anwar too, to be honest. I think right now my answer would be Ash. Anwar, like you said, though, he's had a little bit more time. He's been studying the roster, so on and so forth. But I think Ash comes in with maybe a few more skins on the wall. He's been a head coach. Like Anwar said, kind of the pre-spring camp moves he's made. But I think by the end of the season, we all might be saying Yursich. Because I think that Texas offense has a chance to carry this team probably more so than the Texas defense. I think Yursich is going to be a fine offensive coordinator. If he can kind of tap into some of the the things that helped make him successful with Mike Gundy. You know, I hope Tom Herman lets him kind of have a little bit of freedom to do those types of things and open some things up. But yeah, I think right now, I mean, when you asked the question, Ketch, that was exactly what I was thinking. I was like, probably Ash right now, but I think, you know, 9 months from now, we might be saying Yursich, and sounds like you and I are kind of on the same page here.
Well, because Anwar, I think that, like, I'll from the prism through which you have viewed the discussion, it's impossible, I think, to argue with you. Like, I think everybody, I haven't heard Dustin yet, but I think everybody would be like, yep, makes a lot of sense. You can totally justify that position. But if I ask somebody, I'll play devil's advocate. If I ask somebody, who do you think the best coordinator on the staff is right now? And if somebody said, you know what? I know Chris Ash is really good at Ohio State. He didn't do shit at Rutgers. I mean, they weren't even good on defense. Like, it's one thing to not be good enough that you get fired less than halfway into your final season as a head coach there, but they weren't even good on defense. It wasn't like, you know, so I don't know. It's been a long time since Chris Ash has kicked ass as a college football coach. It's been half a decade. And at least I know that Yursich has been good in the last half decade. And you know what? If I'm trying to decide how to answer who the best coach among the coordinators is, let me ask myself this question. Who do I think I trust the most to have a good first season? I think you could make the case that it's Yursich, and it wouldn't necessarily be because of his dynamic abilities, but he's taking over the better side of the ball right now. And he's got, you know, I don't know how much we're going to end up saying the word Heisman candidate about Sam Ellinger. I don't know if that's a thing. We know that in a best case scenario, it could be, but I don't know how much of this season we'll hear that during the summer, but like he could be framed as that kind of a guy. You know, if you really wanted to look at Chris Ash in a, what have you done for me lately? Don't show me the bathwater. Just show me the baby. Yursich is probably, you can at least make the Yursich case, I think.
Well, I mean, Yursich to that effect though. I mean, Yursich wasn't an OC at Ohio State.
Well, he was like third in the pecking order OC.
He was a guy. Okay. I mean, like
passing game coordinator.
He was a passing game coordinator, right? But I mean, it wasn't, you didn't walk out of there and saying, wow, like when I think of Yursich, I think of Joe Brady. Like, it wasn't that kind of conversation. So, and then he's had success at Oklahoma State. But that success doesn't necessarily mean a national title. He studied under Mike Gundy. Well, one guy studied under Urban Meyer. Like, I don't know. Like, and again, someone's going to like relay this to Yursich.
We're going to be dead to me. We're going to be dead to both coordinators having this like devil's advocate approach to both. We're going to kill ourselves.
He's never going to answer any of my questions or something like that. I heard what you said, man. It's the off season, But I just think obviously, right, from a talent standpoint, you've got Sam, you've got some good receivers and, you know, decent offensive line. So you've got Cade Brewer. So clear, and you got an offense that really wasn't that bad last year. I mean, it is still finished with the top 20. Weren't they like 15th or something like that?
Overall? Yeah, like they were respectable. There's just a huge difference between top 5 and top 15, right? And but yeah, they were good last year on offense.
But, I mean, but if they go from here's the question: if they go from the offense goes from 15 to 10, but this defense goes from 100 and whatever they were to like 50th or 40th, then who's done the better job?
That's a good question.
See, that's where I go back to Anwar is. You know, you guys are making some good points about Yursich and. I know that he's got more toys to play with. He's got the senior quarterback, but like, there's not as much room for growth for him. I think look at where Texas ranks statistically, you know, no matter what basic analytics, whatever, there's just Ash has so much more of an opportunity to really make a like significant improvement on defense. And I know his Rutgers teams were terrible, but they actually got a little bit better on defense relative to what Rutgers was used to being, which was in the 100s. And then I think he had them in the 70s. And
I feel you, but that's a
40 point. I mean, that's basically a 40 position increase.
You are injecting nuance into a public like opinion.
No, you said his Rutgers defenses weren't good. And I think
well, that's not good.
It's not good, but relative to what Rutgers was.
They weren't good enough for him to save his job.
That's Rutgers, man. Good enough for him to get an extension.
Good enough for him to get an extension.
What if Yurcich? See, this is the question. Then I would retort back to Anwar if the question is.
But you didn't answer my question though.
Because I think there's an element to what you said that hasn't yet been exposed. Was Sam Ehlinger first team All Big 12 last year?
No, but you don't like those Big 12 teams anyway.
I'm just.
You think they're kind of trash?
I do think they're kind of trash.
I don't know how you're using that as your.
Well, this is where you listen
evidence.
To,
just but go ahead.
Sit tight. Was he second team All Big 12 a year ago?
Nope.
Okay. Well, if Texas is a top 10 offense, and because we're talking about how much better can the offense get from it was a year ago, that would alter public perception of who the better coach is in this discussion of who the better coordinator is. If Sam Ehlinger is first team All Big 12 next year, there's a good chance that he's also a Heisman finalist, because typically the best quarterback in the Big 12 ends up in New York for the Heisman ceremony. Even Colin Klein has been to the Heisman ceremony as a football player, as a quarterback in the Big 12. If Texas is a top 10 offense, and it means that their quarterback is the best quarterback in the Big 12, and it means that his protege, who a year ago wasn't even an all-conference quarterback, and suddenly the next year he makes the Joe Brady leap into Heisman conversation because of the relationship with Yurcich. I think Yurcich, and this is what Jason and I were talking about a second ago, by the end of the 2020 season, if Yurcich is half as good, if they can make any improvement at all in the offense coming away from the Tim Beck, Tom Herman duo, and Yurcich can make this thing take the next step, that's going to be Sam Ehlinger in almost all likelihood taking that step with him. And it's the most high-profile coaching job that a coach can do in college football. So I would go so far as to say, if Yurcich can make them top 10 in offense, and that means Ehlinger is in that kind of conversation, I think Chris Ash could have a top 25 defense next year, and there would still be people that would be viewing what Yurcich had done with the offense, and they still might come away saying he's the most important, he's the best coordinator on campus, because look what he did to the quarterback position, and there is no more important position in college football than the quarterback position. So I don't know. Like, we'll see. I think the way you asked the question, Anwar, what would my answer be? If it happens like that, I'll take Yurcich. I'll take Yurcich as the guy in a year from now between if Texas was top 10, like you said, and I'll raise you and make it a top 25 defense with Chris Ash. I think there would be the majority of Texas fans that would be more worried about losing Yurcich and what it would mean in the offense dropping back down to pre-Yurcich days. They'll remember Tim Beck. They'll remember Tom Herman. And if Texas is really, really good on offense this year, Tom Herman won't get an ounce of credit for it. It will all be Yurcich. That's the way Tom has allowed this thing, I think, to get framed. And to the victor go the spoils, ultimately. And nothing, there's no bigger spoil in college football if you're an assistant coach than to have your quarterback in the Heisman ceremony.
I think the conversation's out of push at this point. Because I think you make valid points.
I think you make valid points.
I think both. Yeah, so I think that's why I say I think it's almost out of push at this conversation.
But clearly, wasn't the original question who's the better coordinator right now?
I think it was just who's the better coordinator. And then the reason why I like the question so much is because it is a bit rhetorical. But depending on how you frame the question and from what angles, there's a lot of different answers, which is – I think this discussion ended up being kind of interesting to me because.
Oh, yeah. The discussion's great. I think.
The original question, though, wasn't like now. Unless you wanted to, in asking the question, frame it that way. The original question was simply, who is Texas's best coordinator. And I enjoyed that. Let's go into parting shots, and we'll actually do a decent job of staying under like a reasonable time frame this week. Alex, you want to lead us off?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was telling you guys earlier about how I had to go get an appointment for the big V, the big vasectomy, and you said that should be a great parting shot, but I don't really know what I can.
Well, technically, really know what it I would can. Be a parting shot. I mean,
I tell you, it was crazy. It was all right. So, a couple funny things about it. It was so like he got done telling me all this stuff, and I'll be interested to hear from you guys about, you know, he's just saying like after this deal, you got to take it real easy for a good while because
bullshit.
You can get left with. All right, so do you guys think if all six days is six days enough time before I can go out to like UT football practice and go?
Oh my good! I thought you meant have sex, dude. You got to UT football practice the next day.
They told me no way. They said at least 2 days of just sitting on my ass and not doing anything because it can result in permanent testicular.
They got you a little freaked out, don't they?
Little bit. Well, yeah, dude. And so like, and then the dude after this whole time, he's still like, this dude after this whole time, you know, he's got me all freaked out and he starts putting on these plastic gloves and he's like, any more questions? And I'm like, yeah, what the fuck are you doing putting on those gloves? He's
like, coronavirus.
He said, we got to do a quick little you know, testicular check here. And while he was doing that, he started asking me, really, this is an odd parting shot, man. He started asking me questions about, about how I, I have on my Roster Watch podcast, I do ads over there. And one of the sponsors is this company Manscaped, you know, manscaped.com. And so they send me products because, you know, and the guy, you know, he's asking me, he was rubbing on my testicles saying like, oh, like, do you shave your testicles off and stuff? I have a sponsor of one of my, you know, podcasts that wants me to do it. He's holding my balls, looking up at me, and he's like, a sponsor for your podcasts wants you to shave these fucking puppies. I'm like, well, yeah, you know, it's a ball shaving product, and they send me the razors, and they want me to do testimonials and talk about it. And he's like, oh, well, you could do a testimonial about how you need to, you know, it's good to shave your balls before a vasectomy. I was like, God, man, can you get your, like, are my balls okay? Like, can we get done with this portion of the, this is really weird having this conversation right here. But, yeah, man. So,
I think you're done, Alex. I think you're good. I think you got your party shot in.
Yeah.
What is your appointment, Alex?
It's against HIPAA rules, I think, for me to say my exact appointment or the place, but I'll be done about a week before.
Aren't you the one sharing your information?
Now he has standards. He
pulled the Mac Brown HIPAA card at the end of all of that.
I learned from the best. So I should be over it in time for Texas football practices.
So now we need to make sure that you're not going to this doctor every like five times a week, and we're gonna start wondering what the hell is going on.
I want to make sure we got it all.
I gotta make sure that this process went exactly. Alex, this is the fifth time this month you've gone and seen this doctor.
I really shaved really well, Alex. It looks great. You said massage, by the way.
Oh God, no. Anwar, your turn. I just so, there's no real good segue there, so just tossing the grenade.
So anyway, so speaking of vasectomies, right? So Jason, you tell me what you think of this, right? So I was talking to my ex, and I was talking about like the kids. I'm like, man, I cannot wait for these kids to just grow up and get old. And my ex, she had remarried, and she's got like a 19-year-old. She's like, you don't want these problems here. Like she, you know, he's dates all these like these women, and then started telling me that he was dating some woman who was 19, who had two kids from two different dads, right? And she said, luckily, like, they broke it off, like, within a really short period of time. But she said, that's when we have to, really had to have the same-sex conversation to make sure, like, because clearly this woman doesn't care about, like, birth control at all. And so I was like, okay, maybe the solution going forward is when they become a teenager to give them a vasectomy. And then whenever they want to have kids, they have to pay to get it reversed. So it eliminates the oops babies. It eliminates all the, like, what you got to worry about. And it just, when you become 30 years old and you intentionally just say, I want a child, you have to go get a surgical procedure, get it reversed. And then you can just, until then, live your life. So now for sure you want a child. Like, you are with this woman, you believe in her, you believe in the relationship. And you're like, let's go ahead and do it. Not like, oh my God, I forgot to pull out. Jason, you've got an older boy. What do you think of this idea?
I think I'd have to hit him over the head with a 2x4 to drag him in to get a vasectomy at 15, dude.
Well, I mean, but you can make him do just about anything, can't you?
Get his balls snipped? I don't know. That might be pushing the limits,
that
man.
That feels like a Supreme Court case, honestly.
I feel like there's something on the ballot about this, right? Like,
as a father of three daughters, I like the idea of all the other boys getting their balls snipped.
Well, so my parting shot is, I think that's the best way to prevent a teen pregnancy and to prevent unwanted pregnancies in your early 20s, which is, parents, get your kids snipped. And if they really want a child when they get older, hey, don't make it happen.
It's not the worst idea ever, Anwar. Like, I think that we'll kick that one around a little bit. You know, that you sharing that with the universe potentially allow it to be inspected, and then no pun intended, we'll go.
We have no problems. We have no problems, like, with putting, you know, birth controls in women, right? We have zero issues with putting a depo shot or pills and how that affects them hormonally or how that can affect them long term.
When's the earliest you can get? I've never heard it. I've never thought about this before.
I don't know.
What is the youngest vasectomy possible?
I have no clue. I would have to do the research.
We need to reach out to our former, you know, vasectomy doctors and see if they can give us some answers to that one.
There's gonna be a dad that's gonna listen to this and do it for their kid. I guarantee you
they'll go in together. It'll be a father-son thing, like, you know, you have your father-daughter dances.
I could get their balls massaged like Alex.
Father-son dance of sorts. Dustin, I will now toss the grenade to you.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to going to see the baby doctor with my wife later today now after after the vasectomy discussions. Oh, my gosh. Oh, but she is 34 weeks, so only about 5.5-6 weeks until the due date. So it kind of hits you when the calendar turns to a month where realistically your child could be born. And it's like, oh, things are about to get really real. As possibly soon as the end of this month or by the time this month ends. So yeah, I guess trying to prepare myself as best as possibly can for that when it happens. And probably be asking you guys a lot of questions about how did you survive this process in about a month or a couple months.
So if she's 34 weeks, mm-hmm. there's zero way you can travel and cover this team in a tournament. Like, you're talking about 2 weeks from now, you're talking about traveling like when she's 36 weeks, 37?
Yeah, well, I mean, they start measuring at 36 weeks so they can really get a good idea.
Rain on his parade.
No, I want to make sure he's there for the birth of his first child.
Well, I know, right? But like,
that's more so than anything.
Like, yeah, I think that, like, once
first
you
kid,
get,
you just don't know when they're going to come.
Right, yeah. I mean,
you don't have a barometer.
Yeah, so it'll have to be a
some conversations taking
it's
place
gonna
in
be,
McComas
yeah,
household.
It's going to be interesting. And plus, too, like, the thing that sucks about the NCAA tournament, if you're covering a team like Texas that's basically on the bubble, is you don't know if they're in until Sunday. And then you're like, okay, they're in. Then, okay, where are they? You know, it's not like, you know, if you're covering like Kentucky or somebody like that.
I give you permission to not have to travel to the NCAA tournament. And on top of that, Ms. McComas, if you're out there, you need to hear this part. Do not let Dustin put on me that I said he had to travel.
Yeah, I think everyone would be understanding, Dustin, if you just watch these games on television.
But you don't have to do it. Like, I just want her to know.
You know what's going to happen, though, right? You know what's going to happen.
They're going to
make a run to the Sweet 16, and it's going to be like the first game.
And you know what? We've never had somebody say, how come you guys don't have a media presence at the basketball thing?
That's true.
And we're all going to say, because McComas had a baby.
But Dustin, the birth of your first child versus Texas going to the Sweet 16, how's this even a conversation?
Oh, no, no, it's not. But
I want to smack him for his wife.
Yeah.
Well, no, she – like,
well, they could go to the Sweet 16. Here's how
she's been thinking. So we have a really close friend that's getting married in, I think, Fredericksburg, like the last weekend of March. And she's been trying to, like convince herself she's going to go to this. Because we went to a one of the like pre-childbirth classes, and you know, I didn't really know like how long the labor process is. Like, there's pre-labor, there's active labor, all these things. It's a long process. And our teacher was like, oh, you know, like if you're in San Antonio or something like that, you're fine. You can just drive back. You know, nothing's happening. She's like, oh, I can go to this wedding. And I was like, you're gonna be 38 weeks. Like, you're not gonna. I don't think you're gonna want to be at this wedding. So. But yeah, it's considering that the 36-week appointment, I think, would be after the NCAA tournament starts. Like, I wouldn't even be able to know just like how far along she is. So yeah, just imagine if I went to cover Texas, they're one and done in freaking Spokane, Washington, and I like if my wife goes into labor, that would be the worst day of my life.
That's what I'm saying. You can't. I'm not letting you put that on me. I don't want that voodoo on me, like for the rest of her life to have a bad thought process of me because I had you in Spokane, Washington.
Yeah, some of these sites suck. Albany, Spokane.
I'll almost demand that you don't go. Like, I don't want to take that chance. And then, like, you know, because I'm married, so I know. Look, I took my wife to a movie where it was, I think, like the Jeremy Renner. Like, it was cold and they were hunting and they were in Arkansas. I can't remember what the hell the movie was. Anybody know what I'm talking about? The Jeremy Renner Hunter movie. There's a rape scene in the movie. Oh,
yeah, I know which one you're talking about. Yeah, it's on like Netflix.
It's been out for half a decade. And my wife she still says, you took me to a movie where there was a rape in it and didn't tell me. And I was like, for the last 5 years, every time we go to the movies, she asks, is there a rape scene in the movie that I need to know about? Dustin, this is your first child. Believe me, this is when they really start to hold grudges.
Wind River catch. And I'm glad you clarified that random. There was a rape scene in the movie. I was like, that's pretty random, but okay. So I'm glad you clarified where that was coming from.
What was the name of that movie?
Wind River.
Yes, Wind River.
I had to Google it while you were talking.
Thank you for doing that, because I was just going at that point. Who's next on this fun little game? Jason.
What a parting shot thing we've had.
Yeah, I think, you know what? I think I'm going to step away from the ball talk and the vasectomy and baby talk, and I'm going to just keep mine short and sweet. Dead period ended for college football recruiting on Sunday of last week. This weekend, Texas is going to have – it's interesting. There's a 7-on-7 tournament in Houston. It's going to have some Florida-based teams in there, including one called, I think it's South Florida Elite, and they've got a bunch of big-time players. They're going to visit Texas on Monday after playing in that tournament. The big name to know there is Mario Williams. He's a number 16-ranked player in the country out of Plant City, Florida. There's a lot of big-name talent on that team that Texas has offered, but most of those guys are kind of committed or not really looking at Texas. Texas is in Mario Williams' top five. That he released, I think it was back in December. He'll be on campus. A lot of, you know, these big visits where these 7-on-7, the entire teams kind of show up. They're exciting and fans like to talk about them. They usually don't amount to much, but you know what? This one's pretty important, man. You get Mario Williams on campus, you know, even if it's around a group of 20-something other kids and he likes what he sees, then he's probably going to come back for an official visit, and Texas is right there in within striking distance. So Mario Williams, Rivals 100 receiver, will be one of several prospects that will be on campus on Monday.
My final parting shot is two parting shots. Number one, do not cough in public. If at all possible, you will be judged incredibly harshly by the entire room full of people that you are in at this very moment, should you cough or sneeze in a public building. And then number two, wash your hands with soap after you go to the bathroom. Men, we have to have this talk for a second. Last night on Twitter, I saw a thread that was started by a woman who seemed to just be coming to grips with the fact that men a lot of times don't wash their hands after they go to the bathroom. This doesn't have anything to do with the coronavirus. It just has to do with the fact that it's true. There are way too many of us that do not wash their hands every time they go to the bathroom. And at one point, this woman was communicating with another woman, and she was like, you know, they just think their balls are pristine, don't you? And fellas, they're not. Wash your hands every time. You owe it to your, the women in your life, for them to know the answer to the question of, does my man wash his hands every time he goes to the bathroom? If you do nothing else at all for your woman, we had the Valentine's Day talk about what's a good gift and show and conveying love, and why I thought, you know, not a bad reason to have a holiday, because sometimes guys need that extra little push in the back to get to a place. Let's do that with washing our hands. Like, the whole coronavirus thing has us washing our hands with soap a lot of times. It shouldn't take a potential pandemic for us to consistently wash our hands. Don't give me that whole you using soap dries out your hands routine. Adjust. Buy some lotion. Like, put lotion on your hands before you go to bed every night. It worked for my grandmother when she was like 85 years old. Wash your hands with soaps. The women in your life deserve it. Don't be nasty. We'll talk to you next week. Later.